Hello and welcome to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake. Ben and Marcel are finally back together again, not in the same room, but on the same screen. And Mark Telling is also here. Well, I'm here with him in his gaff over in Austria. So that's why he's got to be here, really. It brings nothing.
Hello.
He brings nothing to the proceedings here, but I thought I'd better have him along anyway. But we have had a load of races to get through this weekend. The women were over in Crans-Montana. They raced double downhill and super G. The men were over in Kvitfjell, very cold Kvitfjell, racing downhill and super G. And we're going to start with the women's races over in a very, very warm Crans-Montana. And they raised the finish line, didn't they? Because it was so small, so warm, and they thought it was going to be dangerous if they ran it all the way through to the finish. Gut Bahrami was on fire on day one, and she took the victory. Hooter and Flurry, the world downhill champion, was joint second. Marcel, my friend, welcome back. How are you? And what did you make of the racing, bud?
Good. I'm good. The racing, not so good, I guess. I think the first race was pretty terrible. The conditions were just not very good. I like the track, though.
It's really a cool track, actually, when it runs from the top, though.
Probably one of the best of the women's tour, I guess. I think so, yeah. It's good. But, I mean, you know, you could just see that they were really struggling with their skiing. A lot of them, you know, it's like they didn't have the feeling on the first day. It got better, obviously, on the rest of the weekend. But I think the first one was a tough one. And you know, we heard some complaining as well. So I think they were not.
They weren't happy. I think, but Ben, do you think that with the way that it works, and there are a lot of complaints, obviously they moved the finish area up because of the warm conditions. Do you think that just sort of escalates and sort of creates even more sort of tentative skiing? I mean, it's not easy. And skiing in those conditions, when you're racing downhill, when it's soft and you're not exactly knowing what's coming back from the skis, is obviously a little bit more daunting. But do you think it sort of spirals into something maybe more when they have to move the finish area up?
Yeah, I thought the top was probably where it was worse, because that's where the tighter turns in the mountain were. So trying to load up a ski when the snow's breaking away is a lot more difficult. And as for the finish area, I thought that was just rubbish because the fans couldn't see anything. And what's the point in travelling all that way to watch a race if you're then just watching on a big screen?
Yeah, it's a bit frustrating. But, I mean, obviously none of us were there, so we can't say how dangerous it was. But I mean, again, with all the crashes that we've seen so far this season and the high profile injuries, which is probably the bigger talking point, really, is the fact that they're high profiles. I guess maybe Fizz a little bit cautious, do you think?
I would say so, yeah. I think that piece there, I went there, I think it was for World Juniors event once, and it's baking hot there in the
sun
finish
gets
area.
Sun straight and away, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's in the sun all day. So, I mean, conditions-wise, you could see it was hard for grip. It was uncertain. And the finish area is sort of always seems to be an issue. You know, people come through the line, they either switch off or stop a bit too quick. And it always seems like you sort of can be quite vulnerable there. So I guess from that perspective, who knows, maybe they decided against sort of salting the whole finish area and trying to get it safe enough. But it's a great piece, great terrain, but very difficult to run it there, and especially with the temperatures that we've had in this middle of the season, it's been anything but standard winter. So
I mean, you are running the sun gets on it right from the very get-go. It's a shame, Marcel, because you're 100% right there. So it is a great piece. Like when it's hard and cold, I race European Cup there, and when it's hard and cold, that piece is actually wicked because there's a load of good steep terrain. There's some big difficult turns down onto some flats. There's some really interesting blind gates terrain, and that finish pitch when you go all the way to the finish area is properly good.
It's properly steep there into the finish, isn't it?
It's a really good hill. But the racing itself, Gut Bahrami talked about, you know, it's a shame that she said, didn't she, that if it didn't run all the way to the finish, then maybe it shouldn't have run at all. But I disagree, actually. I think that we're, you know, in a season where we've had compromised starts, obviously more on the men's side than the women's, the fact that it finished three gates from home, yes, not ideal, but surely better run than not run. What do you think, Marcel?
Yeah, I mean, I just wasn't great condition-wise, but it wasn't dangerous. It's just...
And better to have the race than no, you know, better to have it run without the last two turns and that final jump than no race at all, right? I mean, it's still enough in there.
They don't know what they want. They complain no races. They complain races. They complain too many races. They complain too little races. Like, you know, what do you want? I get it.
There's a theme. There's
been a lot of injuries, but it's that constant complaining. It's that constant complaining that drives me mad.
We're with you. We talked about it. Marcel, you missed it last week when Ben and I had a nice good rant.
Yeah, we did. We explored a topic and say we had a ranted. It is interesting. It's not easy to fix, especially when it's weather related. But we've talked about it before. Those shortened races do make for tight racing, and we saw it in Kvyatkyel, as well. The top 16 spread by a second, which always makes for pretty good racing. So yes, the spectacle wasn't quite what we were hoping for, but at least the racing was quite tight. And like you said, the Swiss racers on home snow really showed up and performed.
Well, I was going to say the person that probably didn't perform in the downhills actually anyway, was the person that had sort of most to gain with no Sofia Goggia with the injury, was Stephanie Vanier, was 10th and then 17th, and missed an opportunity to really sort of rack up the pressure against sort of Goggia. Obviously, Goggia's not pressure against Goggia because she can't come back at this point. But, you know, in terms of take points away from her and still hunt for the globe, it was a bit of a missed opportunity for her, which she did eventually take advantage of in the Super G. But in the second downhill, Marta Bassino picked up her first ever downhill World Cup victory, as Brignone was second, just over half a second. Gut Bahrami was third. And then fourth was Elvadina Muzaferia, which was an unbelievable result for her. So pleased. We talked about it, I think, earlier in the season. I can't remember how early on, about all the different nations and different names that we're seeing starting to bring in big performances. And Muzaferia has been around for a little while as well, hasn't she, on this tour? And, you know, I think her PB before that was like 15th or something. I've got it written down somewhere. I'll find it in a minute. 14th. And so for her to come down and do that, I thought was exceptional.
Well, thinking the, I think there was a Europa Cup in the days before. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think she did win one of the Europa Cups, which quite a few of them were using as warm up for that event. I think just going back to the sort of conditions thing and a season like this where you've got, okay, shortened track from moving the start down or the finish up, different conditions, it does throw up sort of random anomalies. Whereas if you've got a perfect day, perfect conditions, difficult setting, you know, the best skiers generally win. So I would say by changing things or there being last minute curveballs, it turns things into a little bit more of a lottery. And you find that with racing, with sort of, we talk about in coaching juniors quite a bit, you kind of, good conditions, hardcore setting, best skier wins, but suddenly you get fog, you get ruts, you get, you know, different variables, and you can find just sort of random results start to fly in.
I don't think that necessarily means it's a lucky result, though. Do you think?
No, I don't.
You still ski good on that day. You might get that, a bit like what we talked about with
More opportunity that you maybe, an opportunity might present itself that perhaps wouldn't,
and
under
you still take
standard
advantage of
conditions.
It,
exactly.
Yeah. I think that's pretty fair, and that's what we want, doesn't it? Like all of these different results.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I was skiing, I always thought, in the end, it doesn't, that's why I don't understand why people are complaining. It doesn't matter what the conditions were. If you won, it's a win for you. Like in, you know, a week's time, no one cares what the conditions were. And
it doesn't say it on the results, does it?
And this is why I like it when like people from further back, you know, they take their chances, because when the conditions are worse and when the conditions are trickier, I think you have already like 50% less people that you have to race against, because 50 or 60% of the people, you know, they get up in the morning, they're like, can't be bothered today. But you still, you know, pick up 45,000 Swiss francs. It doesn't bloody matter. And that's why I don't understand why people complain about it.
Ben, anything to add on that, mate?
I want to go to the races Marcel was in where 40 to 50% of the people didn't bother.
And you still got 45,000 Swiss.
Yeah, more importantly, that bit, yeah.
But Mark, what do you do to your, like, what, and you probably have races as well who, you know, if when they wake up and it's like not really their thing, you know, they're probably not
gonna, yeah, be, we used to have a few of them, but got rid of them,
fair enough.
No, we, you know, we try and you try and sort of get everyone on the same page with a bit of a little almost like a little hack or cheat code, like, right guys, look, it's rough conditions today, it's foggy, we know half the people won't be bothered, or it's hammering with rain, you know, it could be that the course is just destroyed by the time you go and you come last, or it could be that you scrape the top 30. And then, I mean, like we saw with Daniel Yule in Chamonix, it's not been done before at that level, but I think World Juniors in Hafiel, perhaps, I think it was Marco Schwartz, maybe his last year as a junior, I think he came down sort of second in slalom and ended up in the top three. I think the top three was him, Christofferson and AJ. And, you know, I find that kind of stuff makes for an exciting spectacle, doesn't it? So you try and just get the mindset of like, look, we've got more opportunity, yeah, from this curveball rather than less. And now it's up to you to take the opportunity. And it's, I don't know, you'll know it yourselves from being in ski teams. It's super disappointing for the motivation of the whole group when there's a few people just sitting there saying, oh, it'll be cancelled today. Let's hope it's cancelled today. And, you know, your job as a coach is, even if you're thinking the same thing, is to try and pick everyone up and say, you know, come on, it's not over till it's over. Let's see what we can get out of it. And more often than not, the best results we've had as a small nation of skiers that aren't maybe technically the best in the world. If you can have a bit more heart and a bit more fight, you can, you know, at times you can go a bit further. So when I was looking at these women's results, it's pretty much a lockout in women's speed by Swiss, the Austrians and the Italians at the moment. That generally seems to be the three strongest speed teams, especially this weekend. It's quite cool to see, you know, different nations, or especially small teams, because it's hard to compete, as you well know, with them. If you don't have the staff, you don't have the big team around you to be able to create the right training environment, it's quite difficult to create good speed opportunities. So that was brilliant, fourth place. And yeah, sort of backs up her Europa Cup standing.
Yeah, I think also in that environment where you talk about how do you build the motivation, I also think it just takes one decent, you know, if you're starting in the 30s or 40s and just one result from somebody just before you manages to put something good down, like that can be an absolute game changer, yeah, can't it? Like when somebody comes down and does something amazing in and around your bib, you're like, well, why not me? Like, yeah, why can't it be me today? And I think that's the message you've got to try and get through without having to rely on somebody sort of doing it first.
Yeah, and it's also this, it's like when footballers are sort of seen as impact players, and then once they, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, once they've done it once, come on and scored a goal in the last 5 minutes, then they're known, you know, they do it again. Oh, we've done it again. That's what I'm good at. And suddenly in ski racing terms, like, okay, well, I've come in from the back once. All right, I've managed to do it again. Suddenly, oh, I'm well known for skiing in bad conditions. So then when you get the bad conditions again, you have this maybe even false confidence where you're like, well, I'm good in this.
Yeah.
And you start.
But also that doesn't necessarily have to be conditions. That also could be like venues, can't it? I mean, look at the Americans in Val Gardena. Now, it's almost like, you know, when the Americans turn up at Val Gardena at the beginning of the season going, well, we basically own this place, you know, practically with the results that they pulled out from, you know, from, not from nowhere, because that's unfair, but, you know, they're not necessarily the favorite. They wouldn't be the favorites going in if it wasn't Val Gardena, let's say. But the Nyman getting multiple podiums there. Look at Bryce Bennett coming in from in the 30s, yeah, to winning. Like all of a sudden, you know that little spark of confidence, whether it's because you start from the back and you've managed to pull out a few good results in bad weather, or the fact that it's that resort where absolutely nail it. It was like me with Reiteram. We're racing there. All of a sudden, it was like, oh, I know, you know. It's that confidence that you just pull out of somewhere, and all of a sudden you're like,
or it's like Mancuso at the Olympics. It's like, oh, okay, well, There's a major event. It's a major event. I know I'm going to do well here, and that's it's really it's cool to see those kind of I guess they're not anomalies, but they're patterns.
Yeah. But and then so those were the downhills. Anything to add on those downhills?
Just that, if you can hear me, let's see first. that second downhill, Bacino was absolutely incredible.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I don't think she put a foot wrong the entire way down that run. It was halfway down. I thought, oh, she's skiing really nicely if she can hold it together, and just did just kept building and building speed. And watching the likes of, you know, Lara Gubrami not being able to even get within a second of her was really impressive, especially considering she's shown glimpses in Super G before, but in downhill,
just, champion, isn't she?
Yeah, just in downhill, we've not seen that from her. So it was so impressive to watch that run. I know you talked more about the conditions than anything else, but I thought her run was definitely worth a mention.
That's a very good point, because, you know, when you look at that place on paper, again, not necessarily the most technical of tracks, not something you would go, well, that's going to, favour maybe a GS skier. You know, if it was, I don't know, one of the tougher races like Cortina or something, where you go, well, it's so technical that a GS skier could do something in the speed races because there's so much technical stuff to it. Whereas I think like the likes of Crans-Montana, it's like, when it's those sorts of conditions, the top turns, you've got basically two right footers that you have to nail, because then you're onto two flats. And then the very bottom, obviously, you still have to ski well. But there's a lot of gliding in Crans-Montana. And I think you're right, Ben, you definitely warranted a big shout out, because it was a proper downhill run from her. She has got a PB of second, but that's 2020 in Bansko, which again you would say is maybe more technical because of the steepness and because of the angle of it and how narrow it is, means that you're going to spend a lot more time turning maybe than you would have in your tuck necessarily. A good point well made, Mr. Clark. On to the Super G, which was the final day of competition, and Stephanie Vanier finally managed to find her form over the weekend and took the victory. Brignone was only 400ths behind, and then Bacino was third as well. So again, another cracking day for the Italians. And it's looking very, very spicy going into sort of the latter part of the season on the speed side of things. In the Super G standings, Goot leads Hooter by 5 points. Brignone is 34 points behind, and Vanier is 94 points behind. So it's all properly close in the Super G standings, which is great. Marcel, mate, what did you make of that Super G? Did you like it? What did you think? Obviously, we ran to the bottom, not quite as cold as, again, we would have liked, but the piece held up pretty well.
I thought that was actually pretty fun, that Super G. There isn't really much you can do with a Super G. It was quite turny, I guess, compared to the downhill. But you have the track that just moves around a lot. So there's not, you can't really do much on a course setting side. But I thought it was really good. I think Vanier, I was very surprised how quick she was, actually.
So much speed at the bottom, didn't she? I think that was where she made up most of her time, wasn't it?
She was very quick, especially on the flats as well. But I think that one turn, like, I don't know what it's called, but it's just over this massive roller, is like a double undergate, and then you go into that flat, and you had to really be very tight on that gate to carry all the speed out there. And she did that really well, better than everyone else, I think. I think Lara Goop was a bit disappointed. I thought she should have been a bit quicker, but she didn't seem to have the speed in Super G. She was skiing well, didn't make massive errors or anything, just wasn't that quick. And the Italians, obviously, they had a good weekend, I guess, again. So it's nice to see that, so tightly bunched up, especially with Goggia and then the Super G as well. And I don't know what's going to happen when Michaela Schifrin comes back, because, she's running out of races. I think Lara Good has a very good chance this year.
Yeah, I haven't got the overall points on me at the moment, but we'll bring those up right away. But, in terms of the Super G standings, it's nice and close. Downhill standings, Goot leads Goggia by 19 points, who obviously is not going to score anymore. Vanier is 86 points back, and Hooter is 72 points back. So Goot Bahrami leads the standings in in Super G, downhill, and the overall, and the overall now by a couple of hundred points. And you're right. Yes, we're only coming towards the end of February, so there's still quite a bit of racing. But I just wonder whether Michaela Schifrin might.
Can you imagine if the Swiss would win giant slalom, downhill, and Super G, and over a globe, men's and women's? That would be pretty incredible.
Well, Gut's going to basically wipe the floor with everything, isn't she? Pretty much.
Well, and Audemars as well.
And Audemars on the Swiss side. Real power couple. Ben, what did you make of the Super G, buddy? What are your thoughts on it?
Not many, clearly.
can't come off yet. Similar to Marcel, I'd picked Gubrami, so I was very disappointed with her Super G from the first turn. She didn't look at the races on Sunday. First turn, she immediately kind of shifted her heels going into it when everyone else was had enough time to roll up and start building the speed. I just said, on the first turn, and the time just kind of bled away from there, which is not ideal. But obviously, you know, she mentioned in some interviews about the level of tiredness she was feeling. So third day racing after a downhill and a half, maybe she was feeling it, obviously doing a lot of interviews on the Friday after winning, as that's the topic recently in terms of what you have to do off the hill. Would have been a lot of press whether she wanted to or not. So didn't look like herself, whether it's because she's tired or whether she just wasn't fancying the conditions on the final day. Who knows? Normally you expect more from her. I mean, she's still within half a second, so it's not like she skied really badly. It just wasn't the speed we're used to seeing from her. But it was a good race. I think you said at the start, Ed, once the temperatures got a bit colder, the Saturday and Sunday were much better racing than Friday. And I think the standout for me, it was good to see kind of back and showing some of the speed we're used to seeing was Esther Ledecko. It's been a while since we've seen her from injury. More than anything else, and the last couple of weeks just starting to get a feel for the speed again. So looking forward to seeing what she can do in the next couple of weeks when the speed tour rolls on.
She was actually one of those racers, same as, I can't spell, I'm sorry, what's her name?
Muzaferia.
So Esther was doing the European Cup there as well. So that is obviously, that's an advantage, I think, doing it, you know, getting the hang of the track and, you know, being successful in European Cup.
That's one of those as a European Cup racer, when you turn up and you're like, yes, I'm doing well in the standings, you know, I'm going for victories, I'm going for big points, and all of a sudden the World Cup Tour turn up and you're like, oh my God, what the hell?
Well, at least, you know, she's a World Cup winner, and she's, you know, she doesn't matter going back to European Cup and, you know, getting back to the basics, like unlike some other people, so... I think it's very good.
Well, it's warranted as well, isn't it? Especially with Ledecko, because she spent so much of the season out injured as well, hasn't she? So, good for her to get back to racing. You sort of touched on it, Ben, about the tiredness. We're still hearing quite a lot about it. There was an interview that Gut Bahrami did say that she was very, very tired. And so it was throwing up because she was so tired at the start of the second downhill where she was third. So, but I was just looking at this list, and she's only started 20 World Cups this season. You know, like 20 World Cups spanning from the end of October through to the end of February or nearing the end of February. Doesn't really seem like that much. I mean, yes, I've not had to do a load of winners interviews and,
it's a good problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what we touched on last week. It's,
you know what the problem is? She will never have to work a day in her life because she has made enough money ski racing. Fair play to her. But I mean, you know, other people work the whole bloody day for six or five days a week. Like, it's just, you know,
the schedule.
Ski racing is a real job, Marcel.
Well, it is a real job. Don't get me wrong, but I'm saying, you know, like, It's a very much of a privilege to do that, and I don't think it's a jaw, which they make it out it is, which is not. Yeah. It's not true. I've seen both sides of the story, so I can tell you it's not a jaw. It's a lucky to be there.
Yeah, I think the schedule that she's on, I mean, she's been following multi-discipline schedules for years. So in terms of in terms of how taxing it is. Yeah,
through a whole career, which you've been doing it for a long time.
No, I mean, so it's nothing new in that way. But I mean, maybe with a few of the other top skiers out, you're talking about Gojir, Shiffrin mainly, but maybe she's doing a little bit more. But again, it's a good problem to have. I mean, if you're successful in what you're doing, it's a good problem to have. And I wouldn't imagine it's a huge change to what she's been used to. She is, 32, 33? Maybe the cumulative schedule is difficult. But again, I think most people would give a limb to be there. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they expect. Yeah. If we ran less races, I mean, the men's Super G, what have we got, like nine races the whole year? Like, and then Fizz will get slated because there's not enough speed races in the calendar to make it even with the slalom. So they put more races on, and then all of a sudden they're told that they're racing too many times. Yeah. We don't want to be sort of racer bashing or Fizz bashing, but just if you take a step back and not exactly sure what the answer is, unless they don't want to race as often, and then they don't get paid as much, and you know, the fans will disappear because they're like racing less often, and you don't have that sort of a cumulative week. You know, every weekend, you know, there's going to be a race. If it was every other weekend, or you know, one race every three weekends or something, or I don't understand what they're after really. But
I didn't hear much about it around. Sort of, you know, I was thinking to myself for the speed guys, so especially someone like Odermatt, that early part of January where you've got Wengen and then going into Kitzbühel. I was thinking that is a heavy, heavy schedule. And even heavier if you've won and gone out after the race in Kitzbühel as well. it's a massive privilege, very cool. And I didn't hear so much about it until after. It's like a culmination of things after around the Cortina weekend. Seemed to be after the sort of crashes and injuries there. Just one thing added to another, and everyone's had a say about it. And I don't think people have had enough time to actually collect their thoughts on it and make any reasonable conclusions.
Yeah, I think they're making a bit like snap judgments.
It's now
they?
Too many races, too much media, too much this, too much that. And I guess we'll, you know, once there's some time for the dust to settle, people will work out what it is that's actually the cause, or some common factors in working out what the causes are. But it seems to be sort of knee-jerk conclusions.
Which is not,
have to now change this or that. I don't necessarily agree with.
But the racing was good. Really enjoyed the racing this weekend. The women's racing, you know, yes, not great conditions, but in general, great racing, nice and close. Never really knew where the result was coming from, so I thought it was excellent. The men were racing over in Kvitfjell in Norway, and they had proper winter conditions. They were like minus 12 or 13 degrees at the top. Race downhill on Friday, full length downhill, really good, really fast. Yes, not necessarily the most gnarly of downhills on tour, but plenty of terrain, plenty of stuff to keep everybody interested. And Hinterman, who's got some history there, picked up the win. Kriegmeier finding his form, taking a little bit of time on the downhill boards, first podium of the year, but he's had like a podium in every season. I think it's like for the last seven or eight seasons. I think the stat is something like that in terms of a downhill podium, which is he left it late this year, penultimate downhill, but a big result from 800ths away from the win. Cameron Alexander was in third place, back on a podium in that resort as well, because I think he shared the win there last time we raced a couple of years ago. Scratching my head for remembering that one, but I think that's the case. Bryce Bennett, you know, back on a slope where it's all about gliding, or a lot of it is about gliding, and Bryce Bennett back towards the sharp end. And then Franjo von Almen, who's just ripping up the rule book in terms of, you know, it's all about experience on the downhill tour. You need to be there for many, many years to learn the tracks. He's like, no, you don't. I'm just going to do it. Start podiuming and getting close to the front in my 14th World Cup of my career. I thought it was wicked, wicked race. Great to see some really tight old racing. Ben, mate, did you catch that one? What did you make of it?
Yeah, I saw that one, and I saw Mark Ode, Matt's social media post afterwards, and he still can't work out what to do to get podiums there after the downhill. He wasn't too happy with himself. He looked like he was just kind of scratching his head a bit to work out where the speed's going to come from him, because we've seen him be fast on other glidey tracks, and we've seen him be fast on the absolute gnarly sheet ice rough rides. So it's a bit weird that Kvyatkhovet seems to be the one slope he doesn't seem to be able to make magic happen on, because pretty much every other piece in the world he can do whatever he wants on and be the fastest person. So it's a bit weird to see him openly admit that he's kind of stumped by it. But like you said, Ed, there were some absolutely phenomenal performances there. And just like you said, great to see it be winter somewhere.
Go on, Marcel.
I quite like Kvyatkhovet. I think they, I don't know why they didn't race the last time. Was it because the conditions, or did they just,
do you know what? I can't remember off the top of my head why we didn't race there last year.
I think it's a great race. You know, it's part of the calendar for a long time. It's interesting because it's usually quite tight. You know, there's not much you can take off someone other's time. A couple of really, really interesting gates. What is it called? Tommy Moe, that's what that one.
Sort of left footer before the bottom, before you go down the lift. Yeah,
you could see you have to ski with like some brains there, which is good. Cameron Alexander, he was skiing really nicely. I haven't seen him like that the whole year, so good for him. Niels Hintermann was also struggling with a couple of races this year, so good to see him.
Yeah, he talked just quickly, Marcel. He talked
to my roommate when we were about 10 and we were at boarding school.
Who was, sorry, Hintermann?
Yeah.
Was he? Yeah. He seems like quite a good lad to have around. I reckon he's got quite good, he'd be quite good at a night out, I reckon.
I bet he is.
But I was just, sorry, trying to interrupt there, which was bad form. But he talked about quite openly how much he was struggling and found himself in quite a deep sort of hole mentally, I think, this year, and how sort of struggling for form, didn't really know what was happening, couldn't find it at all. And then, coming back to a race where he's won before, coming back to a venue where he knows that he's got form, you know, one of those places where you can go, well, Hintermann's going to be good here because it's like this. And Hintermann goes, yeah, actually, you're bloody right. I'm here,
That's all it takes sometimes, isn't it? Someone saying, "Oh, this one's set for you. This one suits you," and you're like, "Really? Okay, yeah, cool." And I mean, if you know, talking about confidence, if you look at Geoffrey Reed, not to jump the gun too much, but sixth in a downhill,
yeah,
and then podium in the Super G. I mean, that's a phenomenal result, and I think he was massively surprised when I think Odermatt came down and went in behind him. Then you know that's your.
Yeah.
It's everyone's yardstick, isn't it? You're like, right, okay, that's a good run. Although, given what Ben's just said, you could be fooled into thinking that in Kvyatkhovet, couldn't you?
I think in general, the North Americans, they had five in the top 10 or something.
They had a great weekend, yeah.
Yeah, they had a great
weekend. Sam Morse was just in there as well, wasn't he?
And they were struggling a bit.
Somebody have a word with him about stopping doing that silly moose thing. Is that...
you tell him.
he's a bit bigger than me.
But it's, you know, I also saw, I read the same thing about Kriechmeier. Obviously, he had a very tricky season, and I was really hoping for him to find his form early on, because he's always been so close to the downhill World Cup. And I think, you know, with his past results, I think he would deserve to win it. And he said he was obviously, you know, going too hard, you know, not being, you know, not letting the skis run, just being a bit like tight. And I think he didn't.
And that's his calling card, though, isn't it? The smoothness. And he just wasn't really finding it this year. Like you say, maybe, do you think he put too much pressure on himself?
I think so, obviously, because there's, you know, Meyer's off. Like he had I think he got second last year. So he obviously wanted to, you know, take another step, go on to that top podium on the downhill, which is, you know, in Austria, that's worth everything. Like if you win the downhill World Cup, I mean, you're an absolute legend. And, you know, we haven't had, I think Klaus Kröll must have been the last one that we had in the downhill, which is 2012, maybe something like that. And maybe I'm wrong.
But downhill title.
Standings, yeah, because it was like Dominic Paris winning it, Beat Voigt. So I think he might have just wanted to win it. And, you know, he has the potential to do so. But he just wasn't skiing the way he's supposed to be and when he's quickest. But it's good to see him back up there. I think the only shame about the weekend was really like another, how many more injuries? Like 3-4 injuries.
But in training as well, though. Like Sarastead nailing himself, dislocating the shoulder in training. And then Cyprian Sarasan injured himself in training as well.
And Nils Allegra.
Yeah, I think that's hard when it's in training as well, in a training run. But then that, I think, is where experience comes in, because the big net, how often do you look at a downhill training run results list and see, I think like Kriechmeier was like 48th or something in the downhill training. And because the guy knows the place inside out, he probably has to push for like two turns. He probably pushes for that opening section, and then that's about it until he gets down to the Tommy Moe. Whereas maybe the guys, and Sarasan is one of them that doesn't have the experience, because as we well, it's been well documented, he skied GS until about 5 minutes ago. And so so he's probably having to push harder in training. And Allegra off a high off the back of Garmisch was probably looking to try and push. And Sarasted looking to try and be the Norwegian winner, because the Norwegian's been on the podium here for basically every single race in Kvitfjell every year since we've raced here. So, you know, those added bits of pressure maybe just meant that they're pushing a little bit harder in training. But then again, we're going to hear more people going, "I've had far too many injuries today."
You can't blame it on anyone else. Like if you hurt yourself in the first downhill training, like, you know.
Yeah, in those conditions, and that's nothing to do with conditions, absolutely nothing to do with conditions.
It was perfectly fine.
So, you know, it's just going to go into the narrative, though, isn't it? For some people. Some people maybe not in the know. It's just part of the narrative when they're like, "Oh, well, you've got 50 people that were injured this season."
But then, I mean, you do have a lot of people injured this season, but it's quite interesting when I watched it, and, you know, you come into like the 30s, between 20 and 30 at the race, and I was like, how the hell is this guy in there? But then I realized, like, there's so many people missing. Yeah. So you can be 40s in the world ranking and you still being in top 30.
Yeah.
Which is a great chance for them.
Again, lucky, you know, Mark, you already talked about it, how, you know, sometimes you get lucky, whether it's for other people being injured and absent from the start, so you get a better bib number, or the weather, or whatever. You may get given an opportunity, but you still have to take that opportunity. And we've seen that. I think Alexis Monet had a great couple of days. Blaise Guisendonner had a really good weekend. And it was, again, like you were saying, Ben, earlier, like the fine margins that we had all weekend, both on the men's and the women's side, just heightens the, you know, the sort of pressure on the athletes, because they know that they've got to push, because a tenth of a second can be 10 places, can be 15 places very easily.
Oh, yeah, especially when it's a hill like Kvitfjell, where probably similarly to Crans Montana, there's a few turns in there that you know you need to get right. But if you're trying too hard to kind of generate the speed and trying to almost force the gliding, or trying to get acceleration off the back of all the little rolls, you don't know where the time's going.
You do see a lot of shrugging in Kvitfjell.
Yeah, I mean, I can never glide. Anyway, not even if my life depended on it, I couldn't glide for in a ski race, so I stuck to the quick turns. But some of the people, you can almost see their brains ticking over, trying to work out is the extra pressure going to actually give them acceleration, or is it going to cost them time? And it looks like such a difficult hill to make those calculations on. But also, some, like you said, some of the people just seem to have a feel for it, and people like Brian Cochrane Siegel, he's like, there are some hills he just seems so comfortable on, and this looks like one of the ones where if you come back next year, he may well be finding himself up near one of those podiums.
I do hope that is the case. And the anything to add on the downhill, gents?
Nothing from me.
The Super G was out of the same box, wasn't it? With some very, very tight margin. Kriechmeier picking up the victory, and he looked, I don't think, I was going to say, he didn't even look that pleased. He just looked relieved, I think, almost, that he got the win again. And then Jeff Reed, what an amazing weekend and awesome. What an amazing day he must have had. And like you say, Mark, beating Odomat and Paris, who were tied for third, who were a couple of hundredths of a second behind him. But you saw, and it's a great shot. The camera guys knew exactly what they were doing. Like Odomat comes across the line. You've got a lovely side-by-side of Reed just not believing what he's just seen. And you know that, you know, you beat Odomat by a couple of honeys when Odomat's basic, you know, yes, it's not his favorite track, but he's going to be there or thereabouts. He didn't make any big errors. And all of a sudden the guy is just, I mean, what a feeling that must be. I was really pleased with him because I think he struggled to get another racer that's had a tough season. So good for him. But it was a great Super G.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And just great. Again, great to see another person being on, I think, podium for the first time.
First ever podium, and, yeah. PBA was fifth before that.
And Cameron Alexander coming in fifth as well. So great day for the Canadians. And also then, obviously, I'm sure we're going to talk about him, but Tsatsi as well.
I think it was 50.
Was coming in to tie in sixth and put four Italians in the top 10. It just makes it so exciting. And again, coming back to what Marcel said, there's so many guys that are out at the moment. It's just opening doors for other people to jump in here and there. And that, as a spectator, makes it really exciting.
Well, it's a nice message for coaches to be able to go, look, you know, there's half the, you know, it's 10 people not here. You got 10 better bib. Go take advantage of it. You're here. The piece is great. Yeah. Go put in the run of your life and get the result and get your, you know, result of your life as well.
Exactly. Here's our chance. Let's take it.
Marcel?
I could not agree more with all of you. I could not.
That's why we've got you here, Marcel. For the, you know, just
purely to agree. That's it.
No, it was great. It was fantastic. It's a shame they had to take it down a bit, but it didn't really do anything to the Super G. Still a couple of good gates. And we saw, I didn't actually see that, but the guy who did like a 180, that was quite impressive, to be honest. Like,
I just saw the replay of it. Norwegian.
The Norwegian guy, was it Muller? Was it him or was the other guy? I can't remember. Yeah, did a great 360. And then Zabistrand did that little cartwheel out of the net.
Back roll. Yeah.
Backward roll. You know, if you're going to come out, you may as well make it good. As long as you can walk away from it at the other end of things. who was the French dude that nailed himself right at the bottom, T-bone straight into the net?
Really?
And then skied away from it in the end. I think that was downhill. I think it was actually the first day. So I'm jumping around a little bit. But
Niels Allegra and Adrien Fresquet both crashed on the downhill.
Well, I can't remember who it was, but anyway, another sort of a happy... I digress. Not important. Go on, Ben. Talk about Super G.
I was going to go back to you on this one, Ella. You were on cons on this one. Considering the entire point scoring field was within a second of the winner, how fast was Kriegmeier to be 17 hundredths in front of the next nearest person? It's not very often you'd say 17 hundredths is a massive margin, but in a race where everyone seemed to be a hundredth apart, he took coming into that bottom steep section was just completely different to everyone. And you picked up on it that no one else appeared to try it after he'd set a clearly massive speed as well.
Yeah, because he made up I think it was basically like 3/10 basically from there. And I think he was, 2/10 quicker than anybody else in that closing section, which is basically one turn or one and a half turns once you nail the first one. But nobody, you're right, nobody else skied that line. He was so much higher through that Tommy Moe turn, which then meant he could come back at that right footer, then go down the lift. And the speed that he carried across the finish, like across those final few gates. But then nobody really went for it. I think maybe Haase went for it, but I can't remember. He'd finished down in ninth, but I think he did make up a little bit of time. But nobody could get close to Kriegmeier through there. But you're right, Ben. When considering the 30 was under a second and he won by 17 hundredths, means that everybody else was obviously even closer, which was a little bit mad.
That was insane. And watching people come down, and there were quite a lot of people coming into the teens that were the high numbers. So people starting in the 40s and 30s, and you could just see nearly all of them
it was like the run of their career or the result of their career, and they were crossing the line and just absolutely astounded. And just seeing that many people cross the finish line and just celebrate is brilliant. Like, you know, obviously when you're watching the top end, if they're not winning, everyone's mad. And you might get your occasional Christofferson strop, which I know you love, Ed. But
I actually do
seeing love that many people have the best day of their career is really exciting. It just kind of reminds you of, you know, obviously not World Cup racing for me, but just the races where you had like your best result, even if you're not, you know, going to be winning races, whether it's a top 10 or a top 20, and you're like, oh, this is why I do this sport. This is what I'm here for. When you actually put a run together, and especially when you see how close you are as well, there are some races where, you know, you actually see yourself within touching distance of the fastest people, and you're like, okay, I can actually do this.
It's nice grounder, isn't it? Yeah, and I do love seeing people celebrate a 17th or something like that, you know, and it does make you remember that, yes, the winners, and it tends to be the same winners, you know, how the first time winners doesn't happen that often in reality. Whereas like these guys battling in their first World Cups, or Kayo, the French dude that started right at the back in his first race on the Friday, on the Saturday, and his second race was on the Sunday, and he was 31st and like 33rd, a couple of hundredths away from points in both of them. And just like how he was obviously very disappointed, but he would have obviously bitten your arm off had you given it to him like that before he'd raced. But obviously, like, you know, for somebody to come into 30th and have the run of their life and celebrate like they've won.
I think it's actually been better this year for that, because it's one thing that I find is really, when you're watching it on TV, makes it annoying, is when everyone comes through the line and it's like,
and then, get and, you know, as like as possible.
Kitzbühel, Sarrazin jumping on the inflatables, that'll be a sort of iconic picture for forever. And that's brilliant. And, you know, but when I guess she's just got so used to it. When I watch Shiffrin come down and she wins again, she looks at the board and it's just like it's a shock, and doesn't celebrate. And I feel that, you know, it's hard, isn't it? Because if you do, you're arrogant. If you don't, it's probably an actual overthinking thing and difficult to manage for her. But you kind of want to see people come through and be punching the air and claiming it and being like, hell yeah, you know, this is great. And that gives you as a spectator some excitement and enjoyment as well. So when that's not happening, it's frustrating. So it's very, very cool to see guys jumping in, more emotion in the sport, people celebrating success. Well, isn't it? Not always thinking, I should be doing so much better when they've come second or something. I mean, it's still a world-class result in a world-class field.
Yeah, you're 100% right.
You get that. I like the finish area, not the leader's chair shots as well, because there's a few different personality types in there. There's the someone just beat me, oh, I'll politely clap, and then there's the someone just beat me, and you see them smashing their hand into the chair because they've got it, they've lost the lead. And then there's, you know, like you said, the Jeff Reed, oh my God, I just beat Odomat. That's out of this world, just shock more than anything else. So some of those reactions are brilliant. Like, obviously, you don't like the ones that are kind of too petulant. But obviously, you don't want to see people not care that they've been beaten.
Yeah.
Marcel, we talked about that a couple of pods ago, didn't we, about how Leonsberger was getting slated because she comes through, hasn't done that well over some races, and then all of a sudden she's smiling and waving it, and the press were giving her a really hard time, weren't they, for sort of looking all happy and smiley, the fact that she'd come like 17.
You can't be all happy and smiley if you come, you know, if you've already won a slalom World Cup and you're nowhere close to that. Can't be happy, I don't think.
I think that's just her face. I think she's just a smiley person by nature. It's quite hard. It seems like it's quite hard for her not to be smiling. So when...
Well, that's like Gesine, isn't it? Gesine's always smiling too.
Yeah, like something like, you know, there are some people who don't smile when they're, you know, doing amazing. It's just their face just doesn't like smiling, and Leonsberger's the opposite of that. That's love smiling. I wouldn't give her any abuse for that. Like, we talked about it a lot last year when she was going through real struggles. Most of the time she looked almost like bemused smiling. It was almost like, oh, what on earth just happened? Like, how am I 3 seconds off per run? Like, just a confused smile.
But also, like, in that same bracket, is that she's not going to be happy that she's 17th. Like, surely people understand what? The fact that she may be smiling to the camera, but she's not coming to the bottom and going, oh, yippee, I've won a slalom globe and now I'm 17th and I'm 6 seconds behind on the single run.
Well, and she knows she knows it anyway and is just trying to be sort of like, yeah, okay, acknowledge the fans, because she knows full well the powerhouse nation that is Austria and alpine skiing is not going, oh, hell yeah, 17th.
Yeah.
Here we go. I think the other cool thing with some of the results is like that we can easily forget is some of these guys are really young, and so they're actually beating on occasion their heroes, which must be such a strange feeling from being, okay, I'm sort of in middle of the pack obscurity to suddenly like, wow, I took down one of my childhood heroes today. That is unbelievably cool.
Yeah,
and you must, I was going to actually ask you, Marcel, you must have, you know, you podiumed, right? Am I wrong in thinking that? No, you podiumed.
Yeah, I think so. Mate, he might have done. Yeah.
Go on, say it.
I podiumed the first time. Actually, I remember my dad was still with Bodie Miller. And I mean, Bodie Miller crashed, but I was so happy that I was better than Bodie Miller.
I mean, but it's that kind of thing, isn't it?
Wait, if we count crashing as beating him, then I beat Bodie Miller as well. So,
I'd have to look over some results of obscure fizz races and see if he'd attended something and done it.
I did have a look at a couple of Ed's results. Remember, I told you.
Which ones?
I can't remember who you beat. Oh, God damn it. I can't remember. I need to look it up again. It's quite fun when you look at the results. Like, obviously, Cyprian was skiing with me all the time. Audemars, I mean, they've gone a different career trajectory than me, but it's quite fun to look at the results and be like, ooh, I beat you there.
I know. And
that must have hurt.
To be fair, yeah, they're probably at home right now thinking he's getting to do the ski racing podcast and we're not. So yeah,
exactly.
Swings and roundabouts.
Guys, if you're listening, you're more than welcome to come on the podcast. And
yeah, you can replace me, no problem.
But anything to add on racing? We digress again. anything to add? Paris recovered well after falling over and making up time in the downhill. I wonder whether he could have actually won on that downhill day, because he fell, didn't he, off the back of that Jandra jump, which is the sort of turning jump by after the Russie, where he sort of put his hip down and then I think made up quarter of a second between there and the finish, which is pretty impressive.
Hang on a minute. I do have a question for all of you. Why does Jansrud have a jump and Svindal doesn't have any second?
I was thinking the exact same thing on comms. I'd be absolutely livid if I was Svindal. I'd be like, where's my jump?
Yeah, exactly. Why does Jansrud have a jump? Who decided that?
Maybe the finish area or the timing huts named after Svindal.
Maybe it's Kvitfjell Svindal. Maybe it's the whole resort named after him. We just don't get to use the full name. But Jansrud must have nailed himself off there. I can't think why else he would have got.
If Jansrud is listening to it, you definitely deserve a jump there, mate. But Svindal does deserve something as well. Maybe just like a, I don't know,
start hut.
Yeah. The Svindal roller, or I don't know, the Svindal turn, or I don't know,
the Tinder Swindler.
Did I think that?
Surely the Svindal shoes is where it's at.
Into the Russie.
Yeah, can I ask Marcel anything named after you in Austria?
Not a single thing. Not a single thing. Thank God for that. I did not deserve anything.
True.
There might be something named after me in London. Who knows?
That's also not the case.
It's Calvin.
not the case, you don't know.
Right, anyway. Good point about the Jansrud jump, no Svindal. Shus. Yeah. I think Svindal should be lobbying that one.
That should be the title of the podcast, the Svindal Shus.
Right, he can have that. He can have episode 17. There Svindal we go.
Shus. There you go.
Of season six.
Honoured. In his honour.
This weekend coming, we have another couple of days of racing. The women are in Val de Fassa. And they race double Super G, and the men in Palisades Tahoe. They made a trip across the pond and are racing GS on Saturday and Slalom on the Sunday. Looking forward to that one.
I am indeed. Yeah, I thought the Tahoe thing, well, the Tahoe thing was interesting last year for a few reasons, wasn't it? The crazy amounts of snow.
Yeah, they haven't quite got the same.
No, a little bit different this year.
Plenty, though, by all accounts.
And also, obviously, that was Steen Olsen's first win, but amongst the sort of time out to decide whether AJ had or hadn't straddled. But
oh, did you think that he straddled old
Clement Noel?
I
couldn't really tell.
You absolute splinters!
You know what I think. You know it as an athlete. You know when you've done it. There's not a single one I'd done where I didn't realize. I may have carried on and pretended that I didn't realize, but you knew. You just knew. Or maybe these guys are so good and they're so close to the limit that they just don't know. And I was just useless, and so it was obvious.
But you go really slowly. Go, yeah, it's still going between my legs.
Yeah. Oh, play that in slow motion.
The problem with all of us is like, when you have like those guys who's standing at the gates checking if you're straddling, they're probably all gone for like lunch and stuff. And you were like, oh, who cares?
Given the benefit of the doubt.
I had the reverse. My start numbers were so high, I had the entire course crew waiting to pull the course, standing right next to the gates. I was trying to turn around because I had the second run to set, so they were even closer when I was.
Yeah, you couldn't get away with anything about that.
I was just like, why have they got so many judges when I'm skiing? It's outrageous. Dude, it's for the top 15.
But Val di Fassa, that's an interesting one because that is a difficult piece. It's
I don't think I've ever skied
on
there.
The opposite side of San Pellegrino, which is flat, easy, wide, in the sun. Val di Fassa, the piece that they use there up the cable car, that is dark, twisty, turny. I think there's a couple of jumps in it. It's not easy. The light's not good. So, yeah, quite a technical one. Quite narrow as a piece. Interested to see what they do with the setting with that.
Nice. Oh, it's good to have somebody with some knowledge on the pod.
Mm-hmm. I hope they're all rested.
Well, I don't know how long it takes to get across and how they've managed to do it, but let's hope.
Well, let's hope the ones in the helicopter had a lovely flight as well.
In the green helicopter, yeah. So anyway, racing. Marcel, would you like to go first on race one, my friend?
I just go for Esther Ledesca. I think she's back.
She's back and ready to hit the front. Ben?
I'm going Brignone for the first Super G.
Marky Mark?
Goot.
Bassino.
Oh.
And then race two, Brignone.
Race two, Bassino for me.
Oh, look at that little Italian switch.
Okay, I found this on the web for Jesu Bassino. Check it out.
I might have to leave that one in.
Bloody computer. Super Sino. That's a new name.
Maybe that's the new pod. That could be episode 80.
Super Sino.
Right, go on then, Ben.
I'm going to go Connie Hooter for the second Super G.
Oh, that's probably a smart shout.
I go for Steffi Vigneur.
Ooh.
Well, I do believe that with the standings that tight, we are going to get...
Did someone pick Lara Good?
Just for the first one.
Yeah. I'll pick Lara Good, sorry.
No, it's too late, mate. Well, you can only take your first answer.
All right. You make the rules. You tell me.
Yeah, well, then I'm allowed to change, not you. And then the men are over racing giant slalom. None of us are allowed to pick Odomat. So, Ben, would you like to pick first for our Palisades Tahoe giant slalom, please?
Manny Fella.
Zubo.
Zubo. I'm going to go Steen Olsen.
Ooh.
I'm going to go for Brennsteiner.
Oh.
Such an Austrian.
So Austrian.
I haven't picked them the whole season, so I'll just give them, you know. I feel like they're now in shape, so I can pick them.
Okay.
There's a reason you haven't picked him. I say he's 14th in the standings.
Yeah, but he was fourth last Giants slalom.
Does he listen to this podcast or something?
Of course he does.
I highly doubt he does.
They all do. Apologize for laughing.
He's on his way around. Okay. Ben, would you like to go first in slalom?
Yeah, go on then. I'll go double money. Double money again.
Oh. Marcel?
I go for... What's his name again? Amier.
Going Amier again. It's bold.
I'm going to go for Timon Haugen.
Oh, that's a good one.
And then I might go, as we've talked about it already, I might go Steen Olsen again. You know, gets to somewhere that he likes, that he's won.
Bang. Great, great skier. What legend.
I think so too.
No one thinks it's going to be the Guinness Revenge Tour.
No, don't think he's quite coming in with the same form, but I'd love to see him do it.
Popov was on the podium there last year, wasn't he? Is that the run? His coach set second run? Is that correct or not?
Don't know, but we could say, yeah.
I think it was very quick second run. I feel like his coach set. It'd be cool to see Popov back on the podium. But
he has been skiing very well, but just not really been able to finish. And then obviously conditions were against him over in Chamonix. So I think I'd like to see it. He's a very good skier. There's plenty. The thing is with the slalom tour, as we well know, there's so many names that nobody said Clément Noël. Nobody said, I mean, Rashner sits in the top. He's 12th now, but Roche is skiing well. Dominic Rashner.
Never heard of him.
Loic Maillard is obviously doing well. No, nobody's calling Christofferson. No one said Yule. No one said Strasser.
People are calling Christofferson other things, but...
Dear idea. Anything to add, gentlemen?
No one said Dave.
Well, we're not allowed to say Dave. We obviously, that's a given.
What did Dave do there last year?
I don't think he liked it, did he? Because it was soft. I might just be making that up, but
it was what? It
was soft.
What was? Chamonix.
No, Palisades Tahoe last year. It was Powderfields, wasn't it? Marcel, did you have something to add there, my friend?
No, I just said, why has no one said Charlie when we saw him?
Off the GS, yeah.
Is he going?
Yeah, he's on the plane. That's what I said earlier. That's where he's off to.
Uh-huh. You did say that.
BC, business class.
First class. He doesn't go business class. First class all the way. We have taken up far too much time talking far too much rubbish. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Until next time. Bye for now.